Good morning. It's been wonderful sharing with you all this week and the chances I've had to hear back from you and hear about the schools you're in, the places you've served. It's certainly apparent that I'm no fountain of wisdom. Many of you have experiences that also could provide excellent instruction for all of us. So thank you for sharing with me also this week. I guess we need to start by making sure you're awake one last time. A couple of mind traps. I need a chance to try and redeem myself after what Howard said yesterday. His compliments on my aim and then even extrapolating that to my ping pong game, which was, wow. So my first question is for Howard. We'll check out my aim if he gets the question right. And since he's the wordsmith, Howard, what five-letter word becomes shorter when you add two letters to it? He's thinking. Oh, boy. Excellent catch, excellent catch. He dug it out. All right, let's see. Mr. and Mrs. Clatter have five children. Half of them are boys. How is this possible? Yes. The other half are also boys. That's right. Coming in. Oh, bad throw. All right. Well, I have a lot to share this morning. We better jump right in. I've been looking forward to this session all week. Discipline is something that, as a principal, that's kind of my game. That's one of the things I get to practice the most. And so I really do enjoy talking about it. And I usually enjoy discipline sessions after they're over. I don't know that disciplining students is something that anybody loves, but it is a true challenge, and I guess I do like challenges, and so it is something that I don't begrudge as part of my work. When I did my student teaching in my fourth year at Millersville University, I was assigned to Garden Spot High School. And I was assigned to work alongside the chairman of the social studies department. And at Garden Spot, they had a pilot program in which they looked at the incoming freshmen and they tried to determine statistically who was the most likely to drop out of high school. And so they looked at students who were clearly major behavioral problems, likely to drop out, and who clearly had major learning problems that also made them likely to drop out. And they took these about 40 students and put them into two sections. And my assignment as a student teacher was to teach the group that was affectionately named The Group. And so it was a fascinating group to cut your teeth on as a teacher. At the beginning, my cooperating teacher assured me, "I will never leave you alone with these students." But about 3 weeks later, I found myself alone with those students. And it was here at Garden Spot that I discovered good teachers are not born, they're made. When I walked out after my first year of individualized, I thought maybe I was a born good teacher, but at Garden Spot High School, I learned that was not true. You know, some of us have giftings. God has given some of you personalities that just connect with students, and those are all good and necessary things, but you do not become an excellent teacher by being born. You become an excellent teacher by a lot of experience. And so it was that I found myself one day in the classroom. Actually, I believe my cooperating teacher was there, And a young man named Ryan was misbehaving. And so he said, Ryan, go to the hall. Mr. Strickler, you go talk to him. I am as green as grass. And that wasn't really a request. That was an order. So I went out in the hallway with Ryan.
What do you say? I had not a clue.
So you go out there and you stand there and you say, Ryan? So Ryan, why did you do that? Don't know. Ryan, you do know that was wrong, right? Whatever. Okay, well, we're good. So you're not going to do that again, right? Whatever. Okay, you may go back in the classroom. You know, that I don't remember the words. I just remember the feeling from that first discipline session. It was horrible. You know, I sat through 4 years of college, and they never taught me how to discipline a student. And so it was very frustrating as I entered the classroom. What do I do when a student misbehaves? What do I say to them? You know, what is the perfect punishment that will work every time? One day I did find myself alone in the classroom with the group, with Neil. You know, it's fascinating. I remember these students' names 9 years later, give or take. I have a horrible time with names. I've met many wonderful people here whose names I would love to remember, and for the most part, they're just gone. But I remember Ryan, and I remember Neil. I think they've scarred me for life. But at any rate, one day I was in the classroom with Neil, and with the whole class, and Neil says, need to go to the bathroom. Well, Neil was not exactly being cooperative and helpful, and I really thought this was probably not a necessary trip, but probably yet another antic. And no, you need to stay here right now. No, I gotta go, bad, now! Neil, sit down. No, I'm gonna go in the waste can, watch me! And he began marching off toward the waste can. And I don't even remember what I did then. I think I just let him go. What do you do when students just defy your authority? Hopefully that won't happen to you this year, but I know some of you do work with students of that caliber. I wanted to start off with just a list of ideas, because really, as a beginning teacher, hopefully your principal's giving you some ideas. Hopefully your fellow teachers are giving you some ideas. But I'm just going to kind of go down over the list of some standard things that teachers do use to discipline students. But this is certainly not the end of the session. Discipline techniques. And the first one is proximity. You know, we have a young man in the front row here who is just misbehaving. And as I just go over, don't even really need to look at him, but I just start teaching right here. That somehow has a way of just changing his behavior. And as you learn to move around, if you're stuck to a podium in a classroom, you're limiting one of your most effective techniques. That little pulpit up there has been very difficult for me to live with this week. I kept almost falling off the edge because moving around is a very, very strong tool in the teacher's hand. Eye contact. So, you know, lowest level is just proximity. The next level is eye contact. You learn to give the hairy eyeball. And, you know, teachers usually develop this over a number of years. But, you know, you just look. And, you know, good teachers, the children just kind of melt into the floor. You learn to give the look that communicates. The next is just a verbal warning. If someone is doing something they should not be doing, you know it and they know it, tell them. Don't be mean. Don't be harsh. Please stop tapping your pencil. I think a lot of times teachers are too timid to directly address. Please stop. Doesn't need to be mean. Doesn't need to be angry. Look at them for 3 seconds and go on. And, you know, if they choose to defy you, then they're choosing to escalate it. But many times, if you're just firm and direct, it'll stop it. Next level, removal from the classroom. So, you know, I do use hallways. Different schools are different. Depending on the student, you don't want to send them unattended in the hallway. But for some students, particularly some younger ones, if you have a chair out in the hallway or somewhere, to just give them a little time out. You've had 2 warnings. You've continued. Please step out in the hallway. I'll get you when I'm ready. And many times, students hate that. They've lost their audience, and they feel like they've been alienated from the group. Next is removal of privileges. And so this can be a number of things. In my school, we call them minutes. You get, if a student's misbehaving, has had a warning or two, that's 10 minutes. And that means they have 10 minutes they need to spend in the classroom during recess. And then if they get 30 minutes within a week, they get a silent lunch at my school. So they lose the privilege, the freedom, to sit with their classmates at lunchtime. They have to go off to a learning support room where just miserably sit by themselves to eat their lunch, hopefully. Other freedoms you can take away, if you allow a degree of freedom of movement in your classroom, particularly lower elementary, you know, to just take away a privilege. You know, you're allowed to go and get paper without permission, but you know, you cannot leave your seat until without permission, period. Up another level, a caught appearance. Very effective way to deal with things that many times teachers resort to later than they should. Participation grade deductions. You have to be very careful in lowering a student's grade for something like behavior, because a grade is meant to give a message. This is what they've mastered in this subject. And if you let it color too much of that grade, you know, I mean, a misbehaving student could fail the class if you don't weigh it properly, when in fact they actually have learned the material. And that's very hard to explain to a parent when the child really knows the material and they have a failing grade. So be very careful with that, but sometimes that can be a motivation. Assignment of natural consequences. If they broke something, they can clean it up. They made a big mess, it's the same. They may need to redo it, so it's acceptable. They may need to help someone else do something that they've been misbehaving in. They may get an assignment for janitorial work. And finally, send them off to the principal. Do, if you have a principal in your building, please use them. Sometimes teachers just bang their heads against walls and nearly drive themselves to a bad place because they don't use the principal. You know, if a student defies your authority, you've asked them to do something. I don't want my teachers dragging students over the building by their ears or anything like that. Students in my building need to obey the voice of the teacher. And if you make yourself very clear, you say it once, you say it twice, and they defy that, I want my teacher to send that student to me because they have rejected your authority. And now it's time to escalate it significantly. And so at that point, certainly do use your principal. This list is a start. But the problem is the thing that makes discipline work is you, not this list. You could have one person walk into the classroom and go right down this list, do all of them, and completely lose control. You can have another person walk into the classroom and get to number 2, and they have perfect order. So it really is dependent on you as the teacher. the relationship that you have with the students, the amount of money that you have in the bank with that group. This morning, I want to read a scripture related to discipline, and it's a number of verses, I believe it's 17. I just want to hear a little bit what God's Word says to us, and it's Hebrews 12, verses 1 to 17. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight. As we think about discipline, it's helping students to lay aside weights that will ensnare them and the sin which so easily ensnares us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down on the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him, Jesus, who endured such hostility, the cross, from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. You have not yet resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin. Most of you have not shed blood dealing with your students yet. And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons. And it references back to a quote from Proverbs 3. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as sons. He's showing you love. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? But if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate, not sons. Furthermore, we have human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them. But he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. We discipline to bring our students toward holiness. Now, no chastening seems to be joyful for the present. I was worried at the beginning when I was a principal that students would enjoy coming to my office too much. I love interacting, but every so often I hear that you don't want to go to Mr. Strickler's office, and that reassures me. Now, no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Therefore, strengthen the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, so that which is lame may not be dislocated, but rather be healed. Pursue peace with all people and holiness, without which no one will see the Lord. Looking carefully, lest anyone fall short of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up cause trouble, and by this many become defiled. This is why I'm so passionate about this subject. If we do not discipline correctly, we set our students up for bitterness and the defiling of their souls. It is a very serious subject. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person like Esau, who for one morsel of food sold his birthright. For you know that afterward, when he wanted to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place for repentance, though he sought it diligently with tears. Someday, our students, if they're living foolishly, if they're living in rebellion, they're going to look back and most likely with tears wish for some things which were lost. And it's our job to help them make choices so they will not live with that regret. There are two ways to make students alter behavior. One is by pushing, one is by pulling, or some combination of the two. And I think it's best if we do have a combination of the two. You know, corporal punishment, I have to make sure I don't get that mixed up with capital punishment. Corporal punishment spanking is definitely a push. And I think it definitely has a place for the training of children. I unfortunately have some experience with that kind of thing. When I was in school, I don't see Brother Chester here this morning. He missed me. I was just a little too young. But his successor, someone by the name of Peters, which is, you know, a little hard for me to look at Mr. Pete Peters here this week, brother, without thinking back. I'm not sure where he's at here. Without thinking back to my school days and a trip we had to the furnace room. And the one thing about Mr. Peters was that was one of the lightest spankings I ever got in my life. So that was nice. Now there comes Pete. And but the other thing about that spanking was I was being accused of stealing ping pong balls out of the teacher's desk. Now I'm thinking you're already saying guilty, but I couldn't evade the charges because I had been rooting through the teacher's desk, but I'm nearly certain it was another guy that actually took the ping pong balls. But, you know, I was thinking of saying his name, but I don't want to be accused of snitching. So I did take those love taps from Mr. Peters. Lady teachers are something to be feared when it comes to paddling. Miss Waddle, she knew how to swing a paddle. It was about that long, about that wide. As I recall, I was facing the gray furnace room door. Have no idea why, but she swung that thing like a baseball bat. Whew! Then there was a teacher that tried out the ruler on me. Apparently, she thought my knuckles stuck out a little too far. Don't remember why I got that neither. Did sort of hurt. But as I was walking out of the room, we hear one of my buddies, I guess, had been kept in for recess, and we exchanged smiles as I left, and that drew a warning that I could easily get a second rulering. So maybe that's why I love discipline so much, too, is because I think I understand students' minds a little bit when they're in those situations. Lest you think I'm, you know, a terrible person, I would prefer to describe myself as curious and energetic. But for some reason, I did find out about that side of the law. For those of you who do have spanking as an option in your school, sometimes I think it is a very appropriate tool in helping a student to understand when they've done wrong. A student must, when they do wrong, be brought to the place where they acknowledge and repent. And especially in younger students, sometimes nothing more is more effective than the rod. Now, in the schools I've worked in, that's not really been an option. If you work in a very small, close, tight-knit community where there's a high level of trust and brotherhood, it can be used effectively. The larger the school gets and the more diverse the group gets, the more likelihood there is that there will be mistrust and that parents will accuse the teacher or the principal of acting unjustly. And when the parent starts going after the person who administered the punishment, you quickly lose any value that was gained through the punishment. So very typically, larger schools, more diverse schools, it becomes a less effective tool. Your best offense is a good defense. Preventing problems. Whenever you can, you want to prevent problems. And so I'll just run through a list here of a few things that you can do to prevent problems in the first place, and that is establishing proper policies, procedures, and norms. A good classroom setup. I've said it before this week. Here it comes again. If the students know what to expect, they walk into your classroom in the morning, you don't need to say, hey, stop that, stop that. They come in, they know. When I come in, there's some instructions on the board, I go to my seat at such and such a time, and this is what I have to do. You avoid a lot of problems. Establishing proper policies, procedures, and norms. Avoiding favoritism. Students quickly pick up if you are showing favoritism. Now, we're human, and there's just some students that we connect with better than others. And at some point, you know, I don't know that it's possible to completely avoid it. But to not show obvious favoritism. Dealing quickly with petty behaviors. As a new teacher, it's very easy to think, oh, that's just a small thing, I'm going to let it go. Folks, small things become big things very quickly. And you set a precedent for what's allowed in your classroom. If a student is doing something small on it, but it's big enough to catch your attention, and they're not to be doing it, to quickly go over and extinguish that, to say stop, to just stand by them, to look at them, to somehow quickly stop it. Don't let little things become big things. Stop them quickly while they're small. Strategic seating arrangements. I cannot emphasize this enough. I recognize in lower elementary, most times you will have assigned seating right from the get-go. That's a given. In some schools, it's very optional, particularly as you get up to the grades, whether or not you're going to have a seating arrangement. Folks, if you have any trouble at all with discipline, the seating arrangement is your best friend. There were some years where I think the difference between me succeeding and failing in the classroom was my seating arrangement. Seriously. I would have four or five students that were toxic. And if you let those students come into the classroom and choose their seat, you know where they're going to be. In the back of the classroom in a clump. And they will destroy your classroom. You need to break them up. And so it's like playing chess when I make a seating arrangement. You sit down. All right, Sam. Front corner, left side. And all, you know, I see a lot of young ladies here who seem very nice, gentle, quiet. In this scenario, you guys are called insulation. Right beside Sam, there's Susan. Right behind Sam, there's Sandra. Catty-cornered from Sam. Yeah, Judy. Now, Sam's pretty potent. On the lateral, we need a double layer. We'll put Mark over here. He's really quiet. Okay, double layer laterally. All right, now, George. Front and center. Two layers of insulation. One here. We've got to cover straight back and two laterals. Folks, I'm serious. That's how I laid it out. And it saved my life. And yet I'd see some teachers struggle with maintaining order in their classroom, and they'd give open seating. It's so easy to get a basic grip on your class if you separate those foolish students who are there to disrupt. It is key, and I make no apologies. But, Mr. Strickler, I never get to sit beside so-and-so. In Mr. So-and-so's class, we're allowed to sit beside each other. Well, here's how I handle that. Your personality may not work for that, but I would say, do I look like Mr. So-and-so? Do I sound like Mr. So-and-so? Do I smell? Never mind, go sit down. And they go away laughing and a little bit of chit-chat about smell. But the tension has been broken, the subject has been changed, and they're smiling. I've gotten rid of a confrontation quickly. Don't let yourself be drawn into arguments. Which is my next point, avoiding arguments. You know, in that situation, I had a quick punchline and I walk away. Not letting students in. I mean, students love to argue. But if you let them argue with you, it's very easy to quickly let that degenerate into more than a fun argument and to quickly bring resolution when there's a debate. Now, in class, if you're arguing about a concept, that can be really fun. It can help to stimulate students doing research to settle an argument about content. But when it comes to discipline, behavior, stay out of arguments. Deciding when to pursue an offender and when to let them go is a way of preventing problems, because if you nail every little thing, students become tired of it. But there's times when you have a federal case, and there's times when you do not have a federal case. And students have, I mean students, teachers have eyes in the back of their head, right? Some days I do. But there's other times that I am deaf as a doorknob. I heard it, but I decided not to pursue it this time. Maybe because I thought it wasn't serious. Maybe because I decided the time wasn't right. Because, if a student is really building up and defying, I do want to nail that. But I want a case that is going to be able to be appealed all the way to the Supreme Court, and I still win. And so sometimes I'll let one or two go by that I didn't hear. But then I'm waiting for one that I can very clearly explain to the student why it was wrong. They knew it was wrong. If I get challenged by a parent, I can very clearly explain that. So you again, don't little things just build, but you don't need to punish everything in the classroom. You do need to choose which ones are worth pursuing. Please understand, many students misbehave in order to get attention. And it fascinates me that many times teachers play right into the student's plan with how they discipline. If your plan of discipline is very, very predictable, I want a predictable classroom order, but if all of your discipline is very predictable, students know exactly what's going to happen, and some of them will make a calculation. If I do this, this will happen. I'm cool with that. And you think you're punishing them. You are going to do this. But they feel like they are completely in control. They made that calculation. They decided it was worth it, and they're doing it anyway. Be very careful. Because, by doing that action, they got all kinds of notoriety and attention. Be very careful in how you discipline, because many are doing it deliberately just to get attention. Some students misbehave to test you. And it's important to try to discern why there's a misbehavior coming at you. Because some students just need to know the boundaries. And if they very clearly hit the boundary, bounce off, they feel safe. And at that point, they can relax and enjoy your classroom. But if they hit the boundary and it gives and they fall over, and some students just have to keep pushing till it stops. And it's important that you lovingly, not condemningly or in anger, but just very lovingly bounce them off the wall and send them back to their seat. Boy, that sounded bad. Purpose of discipline. I'm grieved as I talk to some of our teachers and our administrators and hear how many times students misbehave. They get called on the carpet for it. They come in angry and defiant. Judgment is meted out on them, and they leave angry and defiant and bitter. The purpose of our discipline is to change behavior and to change hearts. And so we need to think about our discipline. Is it doing what it's intended to do? Are we disciplining for the sake of, he deserves a punishment, he's getting it? Are we disciplining to change? I'm certainly fine with punishments as part of the process. But I'm just very concerned at how many teachers seem to believe that a punishment is the beginning and end of discipline. Students go out bitter and angry, and as the scripture said, become defiled. And they go back to their peer group, and they spread that defilement among the whole group. We need to be very, very careful and intentional in how we discipline. We discipline for a change of heart rather than punitively. I'm getting ahead of myself there. It's important that you learn to read your student, to see whether they're repentant, to see what their attitude is. You know, you've just winding down a discipline session, and, you know, you look at the student, and, wow, they look angry. So you say, wow, you look angry. You say, no, I'm not. You know, you've got work to do. You can't just send them back to the classroom at that point. You can't just go on. Maybe you need to go back to the classroom at that point, but you need to follow up. This has not been solved. You've not changed the heart yet. Just as an observation in here, make confession as easy as possible. Some students have been trained and have learned to fear lying. And that is a wonderful thing. Some students don't fear lying. And how we discipline, if we don't ask our questions well in a discipline session, we can set students up and make it very easy for them to lie and defile their consciences. But if we skillfully ask the questions, acknowledge that we have just a little bit of knowledge that we'll know immediately if they are lying, we can set them up in such a way where we make it very hard for them to lie. And I think that's our job as helpers, to make sure we're asking questions in such a way when we're interviewing students that we make it very hard for them to lie. Because, you know, in my experience in small Christian school, you know, when push came to shove, when they got put in a corner, students who wouldn't normally lie would lie. And very hard for, you know, a fifth grader to get up the courage to go back and confess that lie. And they carry that on their conscience for years and years, maybe for life. Do your best to set up your questions in such a way that it makes them very hard for the student to lie. Steps in discipline. Now, I acknowledge I'm a principal, and I really, really, really do have it easy. Because I'm not teaching classes. When a student comes to me, generally I can drop everything and deal with that student. You do not have that luxury. You've got 20 or 25 other students, perhaps. And so the challenge for you is learning how to fit these steps into the time that you have. And so many times it's going to mean saying, Mark, we're going to need to address this at lunchtime. And it's probably going to mean you're going to miss most of your lunch. And you need to figure out ways to have coverage plans with your principal, because if you're going to do effective discipline, it takes time. And so you need to have your teacher next door able to combine classes for lunch, or to rotate between the two, or if you have a principal, to come in and cover for you, or send them to the principal. But somehow you need to figure out a way to carve out a block of time, because effective discipline seldom happens in 2 minutes. If you're going to work at changing hearts. Steps in discipline. Pray for wisdom. For me, I hear the students coming down the hall, and I say, dear Lord, help me with this one. I really do, because, you know, each situation's different, and some of the solutions that the Lord gives me, I mean, I have no idea where they came from. Never heard of them before, may never use them again, but God gives us the creativity, if we ask, to provide effective discipline. Very important first step. Student misbehaves, get them out of the group. You know, that teacher that wrapped my knuckles, you know, the fact that my buddy was in the classroom, she probably halved any effectiveness that might have had. Because when there's somebody else in the room, the student is going to be thinking about the other people in the room and how he looks to them or she. And so when you get them away from the other students, that's the first step in allowing them to look at themselves and recognize that what they did was wrong. They're going to be very loath to admit it in a group. Get the facts. People ask, you know, what do you do to discipline? And I tell people, basically what I do is talk to them. And doesn't sound very good. Because, you know, you're supposed to punish them. But as you have a relationship with a student, and they really care about what you think, as I talk to them, and they see that I care, and I push through until I see repentance, at the point we get around to punishment, there may still be a punishment. But at that point, I'm very concerned that the punishment will distract from the lesson they just learned. Because if they've just learned a very important lesson and I slap them with a huge punishment, all of a sudden the focus can quickly change to resentment of the punishment. Again, I'm not against punishment. I'm not against spanking. But make sure that you're doing it to get the result you want. And sometimes a big punishment is completely counterproductive. So sit down, talk to the student. What should I have done with Ryan? Ryan, what was going on in there? Tell me what you were thinking. You know, and a lot of times you'll learn things very quickly. Well, Ryan's only the one that got busted. There was actually somebody else doing something, and he shot a spitwad across the room and it hit Ryan in the back of the head, and he jumped and yelled, and now you called Ryan out. You know, and the problem is actually with another student. It's amazing how many times that happens. And you have to listen. And it takes the pressure off of you. You know, what do I do? I'm going into a very tense situation. And for me, it's so much easier to be relaxed. You know, if a teacher brings a student to me, to say, you know, ask the teacher, what happened? Get their story. Teacher walks away. Okay, so you tell me what happened. And I get to sit back and listen for a while and ask questions. You know, if you saw it, certainly as an eyewitness, you have a very good idea of what went on. But it's still very important to ask the student, so tell me what happened there. Because their perspective is very different than yours in the front of the room. Make sure you listen. It'll save you from so many times when you punish wrongly. You really, really need to listen. Get the facts from the person involved. If there was multiple students involved, get the story small. It takes time. I have a recess teacher. I mean, you know, she can spend a lot of time, but I don't begrudge it at all to bring students in, interview them one by one. This is difficult, but you need to get the facts before you take action. Involve parents when necessary. Many times, problems that are just stumping us can be solved very easily with a phone call to a parent. And so many times we just don't do it. You know, you have to be careful not to call the parent too much. But very often, we underutilize parents. If you pick up the phone, call the parent, you have a good parent, where that child comes home that night, they're going to have some splaining to do. And boom, clears up. Very time effective for you. Other times you involve parents directly in discipline. One of my most unique stories was with a student. He was a tough cookie. One of the toughest in my school. Bad attitude. Hated school. Wanted to get out as fast as he could. And he called his teacher a name, which was very inappropriate, and got brought into my office. And I have no idea where I got the idea. But I chatted with him a little bit, got the facts. He admitted what he did. You know, just waiting for that slap on the wrist and get sent away. Said, well, I'm going to call your mom. And you're going to tell your mother what you called your teacher. So, you know, you have to be careful and put yourself in the parent's shoes. This is pretty tough to get this phone call. So, you know, I called up mom. Hi, mom. Your son is in my office. We had an incident in class. And basically, you almost have to tell the parent what it is ahead of time so they can hear it, because the student's not going to do a very complete job of explaining it. But I prep the student. You are going to say this, this, and this. You are going to say the word you called your teacher. You are going to say this. And I grill them, and they're going to be sitting 3 feet in front of me when they say it. And so, you know, I explained to mom the basic scenario, and so I'm going to hand it over to him now, and he's going to explain to you what happened. And here's this tough, bad attitude, angry boy. He picks up the phone. His voice is trembling. And he begins talking to his mother. And he just breaks down. At that moment, we're getting very close to repentance. And at that point, I can start to restore and bring him back. But any other punishment I'd have given him probably would have resulted in more anger. And I think the Lord just provided that one. And I was amazed at the transformation that took place in that boy. You know, a year later, his mother told me that he liked school. He wanted to drop out. And that he wanted to stay in our school. And, you know, he's still not, doesn't have a halo over his head, trust me. But there was a marked change after that. Assess attitude. It's so important that you're reading the students, reading their face, reading their body language, reading their eyes. Are they still angry? If they're still angry, if they're defiant, we can't let this go yet. Assess attitude. I still want to stick with that again a little bit longer. If they're still angry, if they're defiant, if they're not admitting they did wrong, this is where you have to give time. Because until they're convinced of this, you're going to lose the battle if you send them out. And so, I heard this somewhere, maybe on Dobson or somewhere, about somebody trying this. They said, use silence and just groan. And I thought, wow, that sounds really fascinating. I'm going to try it. And so I get a student in. Works great. Grades 1 through 8, maybe even 9. A student's in there, and they're defiant, and they've done something wrong, and they're not willing to admit that they did wrong. And they're just brooding. And you know, a lot, I try and be as gentle as I can, and if gentle doesn't work, then I'll escalate it and get in their face if I need to really let them know what you did is wrong. Do you understand what you did? Do you realize what the consequences were? Do you realize if I did this as an adult, I could be arrested and in jail? Students do a lot of that. I mean, a lot of things students get away with. If I did this as an adult, I'd go and smack somebody upside the head. Literally. Battery charges. Not energizers either. To get in their face and tell them that. And then just to stop. And I sit back in my big leather chair. And I just sit there. Shake my head. And groan. And you may think I'm faking. And you know, I am doing this on purpose. Sometimes I may get close to tears, but I mean, I'll sit there for 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes doing that. I'm trying to convince the child that what they did was serious and wrong. And as I just sit there, that is torture. And it's not my goal to hurt the student, but it's effective. As I just sit there and think through it. And they sit there looking at you, and after a while they're like, you know, did I kill someone? You know, and I love it because it works. Silence. Again, it takes time. I have to get that student to the point where they say, whoa, wow, that really was pretty bad. At the moment I see repentance, I can soften. And at that point, I need to bring closure. So now we need to do some wrap-up. Okay, who do you need to apologize to? Are we going to write it? You're going to do it in person. Is there restitution that needs to be made? Is there a punishment that's going to go along with this to help reinforce the lesson you just learned? But the lesson is learned by talking with the student. The punishment is meant to reinforce the lesson. Pray with the student. Essentially, every student that comes into my office, you know, we'll chat however long. But when I get done, if it's a boy, I go over and put my arm around their shoulder. If it's a girl, I just stand beside him and pray. Dear Lord, Josh really messed up this morning. And he understands that this was a very serious thing. I ask that you would give him the grace and the wisdom to make wiser decisions. And just pray your heart out for him. And then to plan the student's return. You know, even if you just took the student out in the hallway and had a two-minute one with them. Okay, now you're going to walk in that classroom. What's going to happen? Your buddies are going to look at you and see if you're laughing. What are you going to do? What expression are you going to have? As soon as you get dismissed for recess, they're all going to flock around you and say, "What happened? What did he say to you?" What are you going to say? Are you going to say, "Oh, I got in trouble"? Or are you going to say, "Hey, I messed up. I made a bad choice." And I coach them through that. That is critical, because if they go back, even with a good attitude, quickly, as the students surround them, that macho thing wells up in them, and they want to, you know, be cool. And it's very quickly to lose that lesson, but to coach them very specifically through reintegration into the classroom. And then finally, document the incident. Very critical. I ask my teachers, every significant discipline, you know, just have a file on your computer. Date, two sentences, this happened. And, you know, if there's a pattern that emerges, we can see that. If we get to a major point where something needs to happen, a suspension or a major shift, we call the parents in. We have documentation. 17 times in the last 2 months we disciplined for this. Hopefully not. But very helpful. Techniques to avoid. Anger almost always backfires. There are times that I will act angry, but I make sure my emotions are under control, and usually it is me acting when I do show anger. It is a deliberate choice on my part. These students are not responding. They do not understand the significance of their actions. Talking gently and quietly to them is not getting their attention, and so I am going to put it to them straight. Don't you understand? I had some boys that wrote obscenities in a very quiet, gentle girl's notebook, yearbook. I couldn't pin it down on who it was. I wasn't going to try for a confession, but I got in their face. I had it narrowed down to a group, and I got in their face, and I had a teacher come in as a witness for me because I was going to act angry, and I wanted somebody to be able to document exactly what happened in there. I went into that group of boys, and I started out quietly and gently, and I realized, wait, I'm supposed to be getting angry. And about 30 seconds into it, there was a noticeable shift, and I tore him. Because you guys, you're supposed to be men. You're supposed to be ones who protect the weak. You chose one of the weakest people in the school, and you attacked them. You're cowards. And I let them have it. But it was a deliberate choice on my part to raise my voice. If you're going in there, and you really are angry, and you're losing it, and you're red in the face, you've lost a battle. They'll eat you for lunch. Shaming. It still touches something very deep inside of me when I go back to my elementary days. I like to chew on my pencil. Really chew on my pencil. Chew on my pencil till my pencil broke in half. And my teacher went home and got a blue baby teething pretzel and brought it in and made me chew on that in front of the class. I was in my seat. I may have chewed my pencil after that, I don't know. But that really hurts. It may have stopped me from chewing my pencil, but it brings a shame and a hurt that 20 years later still kind of goes through me. I don't think that was a good choice. I also like to slouch down, still do. Had a teacher that thought she would cure me of that. Brought in a rope. Sat me up straight in my chair. Wrapped me up. "You aren't going to slouch, boy." That kind of discipline lasts far longer than it needs to. It brings a hurt to the heart that it travels with you through life. Be very careful. avoid scenarios which are likely to result in a loss of authority. One of the key times that you need to be careful is when you ask for a confession. I work very hard to pin it down. When one of my bathrooms gets trashed, somebody brings toilet paper all over the place. If I can get an eyewitness, I'll take that person. Otherwise, I gather up the toilet paper, throw it in the trash can, and walk out. Because if I march into a class and say, "Somebody trashed the bathroom. Whoever did it, stand up." Now, this may work in lower elementary. It may work if you have extremely sensitive students spiritually. Most of the students I work with, this would not work. And it is a perfect way to lose face. "Come on, who did it? Stand up." And nobody stands. And they start to look at each other. And it is a wonderful, I'm not saying it can never be done, but it can very easily result in your authority being destroyed. Be very careful. I work very, very hard to get an eyewitness. If they like trash in the bathroom, they'll probably do it again. And if it becomes a pattern, sooner or later we'll nab them. Between now and then, I can clean up some toilet paper. But be very careful about begging for that. I remember in school, I was a fairly curious, good student most of the time, sort of. But I remember the teacher trying that, a teacher who had totally lost control of the school. They actually had to have a board member or somebody from the ministry literally come in and sit in his classroom to keep order. But I remember the one day he called us, "Somebody did such and such. Do you know why I kept you in here today?" And my stupid buddy raised his hand and told him. I couldn't believe it. I do remember walking out in the hallway close to the bottom of the steps, Reamsman High School. "What are you thinking? You never give that to him. You never know which thing he's after." You know? I mean, boys are boys. Give him a little credit. Be very careful when you demand a confession out of a group. It can work, but it can also explode. I am certainly not perfect. I have made many, many mistakes. And sometimes I've hurt students very badly. There's times when I've caught a student and accused them and discovered through questioning that, boy, that pretty much was a false accusation, and had to bring a student back in with my arm around their shoulder and stand in front of the class and say, "I was wrong. That accusation wasn't fair. And I am clearing him of these charges, and I want all of you to know that." And to have the whole student body give him a hand as he goes and sits down. It's not fun to do that, but we need to be willing to do that. I've made plenty of other mistakes, but I am past out of time, and I don't want to be stealing it from others. There are exceptional cases, hard rebellion. There are cases, things like fetal alcohol syndrome, reactive attachment disorder. These are real things. I deal with a very small subset of students in my school, probably 3%, and a number of them have these things. And I spend quite a bit of time dealing with them, situations like this. Nancy Thomas works with very troubled children. There's a DVD out there called Built Brilliant Brains Through Bonding. She works with some of the most troubled children in the nation. I showed that DVD to my entire staff. I'm not saying everything she says is gospel, but it is very, very helpful if you deal with extreme cases like RAD, fetal alcohol, ADHD, in extreme cases. It would have been very Anabaptist for me to give my final point, which is peacemaking and how we sit down and bring students together. But ultimately, I'm going to skip that part, but ultimately our goal in discipline is to change hearts, to bring the students back to fellowship with the class, to bring students back to fellowship with the Lord. And in that process, we're restoring a peace, which is one of the most foundational principles of our communities. Thank you very much for your patience. I wish you all the best as you go to your classrooms. God bless you.